Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Sports Radio 810 WHB, the Interurban Lofts proudly present The Border Patrol with Stephen St. John and Nate Buchanan.
Good morning, my neighbors!
It's showtime!
I know the consequence is going to be difficult for the people who are spending tons of money to get players. And you've read about them. You know who they are. I mean, we were second in recruiting last year. A&M was first. A&M bought every player on their team, made a deal for name, image, and likeness. All right, we didn't buy one player. All right, but I don't know if we're going to be able to sustain that in the future because more and more people are doing it.
Have you had any contact with Nick since?
No. Oh, he's called.
You just didn't take the call?
Not going to. We're done.
And
he showed you who he is.
And then I just wanted to...
He's the greatest ever, huh?
And then I just wanted
when
to...
you got all the advantages?
Huh?
It's easy.
And I just wanted to just put it point blank. So, no players in your... You're saying that no players...
There's no law of anything we ever promised, done, anything that goes against the laws of the state of Texas, and it's insulting to say a 17-year-old and his family broke laws. No.
Good morning, Kansas City. This is the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Marco Marquez in studio on this Friday, May 20th, 2022. Nate Buchanan out on location. Let's check in with Nate and find out where he is. Nate, where are you today?
Well, good morning, Stephen. I am coming to you from Blue Hills Country Club for the Advent Health Corn Ferry Classic. Which the place is already bustling. We got guys out here on the driving range, guys out on the putting green getting themselves ready for this morning as the next stars of the PGA Tour will be teeing off here in a little bit today. In fact, the first tee time's in less than an hour from now.
And you've already got people there, huh?
Oh, man. Hartzell Gray was here bright and early, setting things up, bringing his energy and attitude to the mix. We got, there's already bustling here. The first tee times will be at about 6:55 this morning. So, yeah, it's busy already. But I tell you what, it's not too late for you to get tickets to come out here and see some of the best golfers in the entire country and guys that will be playing on the PGA Tour. You can just go to AdventHealthChampionship.com. That's AdventHealthChampionship.com. You can get your tickets there. They have all kinds of different hospitality options available. They've got a comfortable mix of golf view and hospitality with all you can eat and drink on the 18th hole. That's where one of the suites is. It's a beautiful place out here. It's a lot of fun. And you can get your tickets right now. AdventHealthChampionship.com. It's going to be going on all weekend, today, tomorrow, and Sunday. Of course, Sunday is championship day, the final round of competition. I think the weather's supposed to be pretty good this weekend. Last year I was out here, brought my dad and my nephews and my son out here, and we watched a few hours of the golf and had an amazing time, even though last year the weather wasn't great. It had been raining like every day leading up to the tournament, and so there was a lot of mud on the course. It was really difficult for them to manage it this time around. There's been a little rain this week, but nothing too much. Probably just enough to make the course really, really nice. And I think it's supposed to be beautiful this weekend. So if you want to entertain clients, if you want to have fun with your family like I did last year, if you just want to come out and watch some great golf, maybe meet Greg Gurley. I know this is his home turf right here. He was out here holding court and, you know, entertaining everybody last year. You might be able to see him. This is a great place to be this weekend.
Tell me more about all the food and the drink and the festive atmosphere where people could take part.
Okay, I'm just gonna read to you what it says here.
Read it.
Entertain partners, prospects, or employees. Several hospitality options available, including all the action in the Championship Club, located on the exciting par 5 18th hole, featuring a comfortable mix of golf view and hospitality with all you can eat and drink. They had some delicious drinks out here last year. I did have one or two. I know that'll surprise you.
Right.
But
I'd be more interested in the eat. I know that'll surprise you.
They had some delicious food out here as well, and I enjoyed some of that. So I'll have to find out what exactly is on the menu when it comes to the Champions Club. I don't know if they'll let me in there. I don't know if they – what's that? Whatever you want, they say. Whatever you want. What you can think of Lobster's Thermidor. That's what I'd like to have. Yeah.
The best way –
I don't know if I'm allowed in there.
Well, the best way to talk about this is have them put something together, send it over here to the broadcast studio where Marco and I can sample it, and then we can properly convey what it is to the listener.
Yes.
Okay, Hartzell, are you heading back to the station at any point, or are you staying here this whole time? Oh, he's staying here. Sorry, I was going to send him back to, you know, with some food for you guys. You know?
Right.
Yeah. Oh, he's eating here. No, they want some food back at the studio. Oh, yeah. We'll figure it out.
Tell him nobody cares what he's doing.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to see if he could bring back some food for you if he was heading back to the studio, but apparently not.
All right. Hey, Marco, I'll take care of you. When Nate's going, I usually treat the whole crew to something special, so.
You're always too kind. I feel like I told you yesterday. I feel like a St. John sometimes when I'm with you.
Last Friday, you were like a St. John. This Friday, we're going to take care of business today. Also,
miss
as well.
Jello shots on that guy over there.
There we go. That's exactly right. I'm going to tell you what. That was a big ass tab at the end of the night that I got. I look. Hey,
Seabass over there said he's got the whole tab.
Ma'am, could this possibly be right? Is that young boy with you? I said, yeah, he is. I go, that's right. Okay, then. Stan Weber will
I don't know
be
if they have
us.
Jello shots here at the championship, but
Stan
I'll
Weber
find out.
Will be with us coming up in a little bit. Then we're going to talk to Gary Lezak. We'll also hear from Mike McFarland. So Tim Grunhard, now he insisted upon having your number because he likes to check in with you. Did he check in with you? I left him alone yesterday.
No, he didn't check in with me. I'll check in with him, though, right now.
I know he's in St. Louis. He was in St. Louis because he was broadcasting Crunch Time with Lebo from St. Louis. And so he's there for a graduation. So I only imagine that he'll be, because he's rarely in Kansas City anymore.
Right.
But then I thought, oh, boy, am I supposed to confirm with him? But then he asked for Marco's number, and he wanted to start confirming with you. So let the hilarity ensue. If not, I'm sure that we can make do in the 9 o'clock hour. But Tim Grunhard is expected to join us at 9:05. I think from St. Louis, based on what I heard yesterday on the show. But before then, Stan Weber, Gary Lezak, and Mike McFarland will talk baseball with us. Last night, the Royals lost 7-4. They were off to a good start in the game, but they couldn't hold on to the lead. They were down, or they were up 3-0. And then the White Sox started to claw back and eventually took the lead for good and win the game 7-4. Some pretty good performances offensively from Hunter Dozier, who went 3-for-4 with a home run and 3 ribbies. So that's good. Nicky Lopez had a couple of hits. And so there's some signs that he's coming out of his season-long funk. Kyle Isbell in the lineup again is a good thing. He had 2 more hits. So he has back-to-back games where he had multiple hits. And I like that. And I think that you'll see him continue to produce if they give him at-bats. And so he went 2-for-4 yesterday. Benintendi had another couple of hits. Bobby Witt Jr. had a hit and scored 2 runs. Scored twice when Hunter Dozier drove him in 2 different times. And so Melendez had a hit. But here's the problem. Carlos Hernandez started. And he, you know, and I get it. They had a whole bunch of games. And they're in the stretch where they got a lot of games because of, you know, makeups and doubleheaders. And so you need arms out there. But, you know, in the rotation and things can't quite settle down yet. But, man, I thought the last start would be the last time we'd see him in the rotation for a while. He gets another start yesterday and goes 3 innings, 5 hits and 5 walks, 3 earned runs. He strikes out 3, takes him 77 pitches to get through 3 innings, and his ERA goes down slightly to 9.10. And he cannot be left in the rotation. That's got to be it for him for a while. You saw Jackson Coar get blown up, and he got sent down. You saw Brady Singer wasn't effective, and he got sent down. You have to handle Carlos Hernandez. They've already given him plenty enough time to try to pitch his way out of this thing, and he's not doing it. If you look at, just look at every start he's had this year. Nothing's been good enough. His first start was 4 1/3. He gave up 4 runs, 6 hits, 2 walks. Second start, 4 1/3, 8 hits and a walk with 3 runs. 5 1/3, 7 hits and or 8 hits and a walk, 3 runs. 4 innings with 2 runs, but he had 9 hits and walks. His last couple of starts have just been awful. 4 2/3, 7 hits, 2 walks, 6 runs. His last start in Colorado, 4 innings, 8 hits, 3 walks, 9 earned runs. And then yesterday wasn't good enough as well. So it doesn't matter if he's at home or if he's on the road. He's not pitching deep enough in the games. He's not getting enough guys out. And he's incredibly erratic. His control is not there. His command is not there. And right now he's just not good enough to be in a major league rotation. After 7 starts, 29 2/3 innings, 44 hits, 20 walks. And he only has 16 strikeouts in 29 2/3 innings. So the swing and miss isn't there. That ain't good enough. And it just kills the bullpen whenever he starts. And that has a cumulative effect moving forward. That just affects everything with the pitching staff. And so that's got to be the last time we see him in the rotation for a while, right? He's got to – I would say go to the bullpen, but I don't think he's even pitching well enough to – I want to see him in the bullpen. Send him down and try to see if they can fix things the way they did with Brady Singer and the way they're trying to do with Jackson Coar.
Yeah, and it seems like right now, they've had these doubleheaders, so they've maybe needed some extra pitching in the starting pitching vein. But, you know, Brady Singer's got to come back up and take that spot, you would think. So, you know, you're looking at a rotation right now. If you replace Hernandez with Singer, Lynch, Keller, Heasley, Singer, Greinke. You know what? That's actually a 5-man rotation that I'm feeling okay about right now. I don't want to get carried away with Heasley or even Singer at this point because it's only 1 start, but it was a great start. But those guys have at least given you some reason to feel like when they go out there, you know, they're going to give you a chance to win. And you're right about Hernandez. I don't know what's happened because he was the guy that we were almost, I think we were almost excited about coming into the season with the way that he pitched last year. And that's what's been so bizarre about some of this is the guys that pitched the best last year, Bubich and Hernandez, are the ones that seem to be struggling the most to start this season. So, you know, I don't know if it's a trip to the minor leagues or what he needs, but yeah, you can't stay in the rotation if you're pitching like that.
No, he's been terrible. It's not, you know, like I said, it hurts the bullpen. It just overworks the bullpen. He's not giving the Royals a chance to win. He has not had a good start. And so yet this year, so he needs to go down, and you're right, that five-man rotation, that's what it should be, at least for the time being moving forward. And so speaking of what's going on down at AAA, where Carlos Hernandez should be very soon, it was a really good night last night for Omaha. Number one, Jackson Kowar pitched again. He was coming off his best performance of the year down in Omaha. And last night was pretty good. It's again, it's a step forward. Five innings, four hits, two runs, only one walk, and six strikeouts. He did give up two home runs, but you'll take that based on how he's been struggling both at the major league level and the minor league level. Five innings, two hits, or four hits, two runs, one walk, six strikeouts. But even more exciting, what they're calling the Bash Brothers down at AAA, Nick Prado and Vinny Pasquantino, were very impressive last night. Nick Prado had two home runs, including just a freaking moonshot to center field. But Prado goes 2-for-3 with three runs scored, three ribbies, two walks, and two home runs. And then Vinny Pasquantino continues to produce. He went 2-for-5 last night with a couple of runs scored and three ribbies, including his ninth home run of the year and his 10th double. And so not only does he have an OPS well over 900, 935 right now, he's hitting for power. He has nine home runs. He has 10 doubles. And he continues to kick ass down at AAA. He has a very low BABIP, and people will laugh at that. But because people look at his batting average, well, he's only hitting 262. Well, look deeper. His OPS is 935. But he has a very unlucky BABIP for a while. There's been in the 220s and 230s. Average BABIP for somebody that's batting average on balls in play is usually around 300, to give you an idea of what you're looking at. And so he's hit into some bad luck. And so his average is going to skyrocket at some point. And not like it's terrible, it's 262, but his on-base percentage is terrific. His OPS is very, very good, because right now he's his on-base percentage is 373. You'll take that all day long, and that's going to rise as his average rises. He's still taking walks, and like I said, hitting for power with 10 doubles and 9 home runs. So good night last night down in Omaha for Nick Prado, for Vinny Pasquantino, and for Jackson Kowar. We'll take a break. Back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB and 38 The Spot. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. We're going to play some more of the, and we told you when we played the Nick Saban comments yesterday in the 9 o'clock hour that we would hear a response from Jimbo Fisher. We didn't know it would be, quite the response that we heard, as Jimbo was very pissed off and very angry. And we're going to play those when Stan Weber gets here to get his reaction to that. But Jimbo did not hold back and was very, very mad, held a press conference, and then even said, as you heard there in the intro, that somebody asked if Nick Saban tried to contact him, and he said he called him, and they're done. He's not taking his call.
Nope.
So we'll see what Stan has to say about Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher and the war of words, and then Deion Sanders kind of staying on the outside of it, but also involved because of Nick Saban. Last night also in the NBA playoffs, can we get a good game, please? That was, look, Boston looked terrific, but the game was garbage. That wasn't competitive. And so anyone looking for some exciting, compelling, dramatic basketball in either the Eastern Conference or Western Conference Finals, you ain't getting it, because Boston hammered the Heat last night, 127 to 102. Marcus Smart returned and almost went for a triple-double, 24 points, 9 rebounds, 12 assists. And so you could see that the Boston Celtics were just a little bit different with Marcus Smart as opposed to without him in game one. And so we've seen some blowouts in the first few games of the conference finals. We'll see if that continues tonight in game two of the Western Conference Finals with the Mavericks at the Warriors. And the Warriors, of course, up one game to nothing there. But it feels like, I mean, I know the Celtics lost game one to the Heat, but they were shorthanded, as we talked about, with no Marcus Smart and no Al Horford. It seems like now that the Celtics look so good and taking game two on the road, it feels like we're headed towards a Warriors and Celtics NBA Finals, which I think would be wildly entertaining. And that would probably be the best matchup of the four teams that are left. I mean, you talk about star power and you talk about what could be, you think about the Celtics and their tremendous hard-nosed defense, you know, going up against the Warriors and their great offensive, their beautiful basketball that they play. That could be a really fun NBA Finals to watch. But so far, the conference finals, that has not been it. That has not been exciting at all, because we've seen blowouts and games that were not compelling in the second half. But the Celtics look really, really good. And Marcus Smart, like I said, damn near went for a triple-double last night. So it's wild, man, to see him, to think about what he was at Oklahoma State. And I thought he'd be good, you know, in the NBA. But, Nate, you didn't think he'd be this good either, did you?
No. I thought he'd be a role player. I mean, I guess you could argue that he's a role player in terms of he's not like, I mean, Jason Tatum is the star of that team, and Jaylen Brown is probably, you know, if there's a Batman and Robin, you know, that's the Batman and Robin combo of that team. So I guess if you want to say that, but I mean, this dude, I think these last two games just prove how crucial he is to that team. And I mean, a guy that can go for 24, 12 assists and 9 rebounds in a conference final.
Yeah, that's not a role player.
I did not think Marcus Smart was going to be that kind of player at the NBA level. And shame on me, because he is. And
also defensive player of the year.
Yeah, I mean, the dude, he frustrates people. He gets under people's skin. And I actually think that's part of his game, is to get under people's skin. You know, with the flopping and getting up, you know, he likes to do that thing where you get up all on a guy and give him no space, and then as soon as the guy even turns his body to try to get away from you, he acts like he got elbowed in the face and falls to the ground, you know, and tries to buy fouls that way, and he does some of that stuff, but it's all just to me. I mean, playing against him would be the biggest pain in the butt ever. And that's mentality. I mean, his mentality, to me, has carried him. He was not that great of a shooter when he was in college. I don't remember what his stats were, but I do remember thinking, like, if he's going to make it in the NBA, he's going to have to get a lot better as a shooter. And he has. I mean, that dude went 5-for-12 from three last night. He has turned himself into one of the best players in the NBA and a guy that is, you know, helping his team in the conference finals in a massive way. So yeah, he's far exceeded what I thought he was going to be. And I think it's all credit to his mentality, you know, and how driven and focused he is and how competitive he is.
Who wins that series?
I'm going to go with the Celtics, because they got him back, you know, and they got Al Horford back too. And we saw that Horford's capable of going for 30, apparently, in these playoffs, even at his age. They don't need him to do that. But I think with Marcus Smart, that just tips the balance in favor of the Heat. I saw the stat on ESPN last night that when games, when series in the NBA are tied 1-1, the team that wins game three goes on to win the series well over 70% of the time. So whoever wins this game three, and I think the Celtics will, has got a, you know, got a great chance of winning the series. So I'm going with Boston. What do you think?
Boston.
Yeah.
Boston.
It's just crazy that both games were blowouts. You know, like that's a we see that in the NBA sometimes where, you know, one team gets a blowout the first game, the other team gets a blowout. The same two teams, and I realize there were two different players that played for the Celtics, but that shouldn't make that big of a difference where it's a blowout one way and then a blowout the other. It's kind of weird how that happens sometimes, but I'll go Boston.
Who do you root for if it ends up Warriors and Celtics?
Oof, I don't know. I think I just root for seven games. I like both teams. I like what they're about. I like the.
I'll root against Boston fans.
Well, that's fair. That's fair.
I think.
But you know, do you really want to root for Oakland fans?
I don't know.
I mean, I guess they're in San Francisco now. I don't know if that makes it any better.
Maybe what
San Francisco is just like a fancy, you know, snooty Oakland. Really,
the Raiders aren't in Oakland anymore.
Okay. So we don't care.
I mean, I like watching the Warriors. I like Steph Curry probably more than any other player. I like the trash that Draymond Green talks.
It's Phil's team,
I guess,
too,
I'd root for Andrew Wiggins, right? Wiggins get a ring.
Phil picked him. Remember when he was on the show? Phil said before the playoffs even started, he had the Warriors. So,
well, there you go.
Phil's no dummy.
I got a root for the. I got a Warriors T-shirt that my son gave me as a birthday present a few years ago. So,
Boston has won enough.
Yeah, that's fair.
In for one lifetime. You know, and I just I'll never root for a Boston team to win anything again.
How about that? The whole city of Boston.
Really, I'm seriously.
Yeah.
Patriots, Red Sox, Celtics. I wish them to
even
never
the Bruins
win.
Have won a bunch, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but for the sports that I follow. I wish them to never win a title again. Is that too strong?
No, hey man, you got to do you.
Right.
I like the Celtics. I've always liked the Celtics. You know, since I was a kid, I always liked the Celtics. So I'm not like a diehard fan or anything like that. But I never mind seeing them win. But I understand what you're saying. I mean, in general, the city of Boston, they've had enough.
Right.
They've had enough success.
Let's take a break. We'll be back after this on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John with Stan Weber and Marco Marquez in studio, and we have Nate Bucati out on location. Nate, to once again tell people where you are, please.
I am at the Advent Health Corn Ferry Classic at Blue Hills, and Stephen, they just gave me and Hartzell the Cadillac treatment here. They have brought us a delicious omelet that appears to have sausage and cheese and bacon and all kinds of delicious things in it, some breakfast potatoes. They brought me a Bloody Mary and a glass of champagne.
Wow.
With some orange juice so that we can make mimosas if we want to.
French champagne.
They brought it.
It's always been celebrated for its excellence. It is a California champagne.
That's just what we need to have you drinking champagne. Right.
Well,
now,
I gave the champagne to Hartzell. He's over here. He's got the proper pinky placement, you know, sticking his pinky out while he drinks his fancy champagne.
Right.
But I am sipping on this Bloody Mary. I will admit that. So,
Is that legal? Yeah. Is that a violation?
Drake told me it's all above board.
Is it?
Yeah.
I don't know about that. Stan, no omelets and mimosas here, but I don't know. There's some dry roasted peanuts in Lebo's office. I know where he keeps them, so if you want, you know.
You do know
snacks.
Where Todd keeps all?
Yeah.
He's got extras.
He's got some pork rinds. I know he's got some.
He just gets healthier and healthier, though.
He does, doesn't he? He's got some protein bars. He's got some dry roasted peanuts. So Sorry, Todd.
You should know Todd
right
as well as I do. You know, think back 20 years ago or so, and
I forgot about Mobile.
All the healthy stuff.
Well, you know, he's very, because yesterday, what was it, 2 days ago, when we had Whataburger that brought breakfast in,
yeah,
we kept trying to tempt him, and he wouldn't even look in the studio. He's running away from us. I tried to give him a breakfast sandwich. He is tremendously disciplined. Stan, how much have you heard from Nick Saban and Jimbo Fisher so far? Have you listened to some of these comments?
I've listened to a little bit verbally. I've read something about it, and we do have some fireworks in the old SEC and then a few other places as well. So, yeah, it's not exactly what Greg Sankey, the commissioner of the SEC, wanted to go on. I guess he had to fine each of them or at least talk about a certain rule that was broken because they're not supposed to talk trash about another school.
Right.
But they definitely are. And they play each other this year.
And so
and the SEC teams don't always play each other, right? You could see where A&M would play against Alabama 5 years from now. No one can care. But they actually are going to play in Tuscaloosa this year.
Oh, yeah. They're in the same division, so they got to butt
October
heads.
8th, I believe it is, something like that.
And so so what you were saying about Greg Sankey, he reprimanded, publicly reprimanded.
Okay, maybe that's no money
the
then.
Two coaches, which means nothing.
Right.
It means, like, what do they care? Publicly reprimands the two coaches for their violation of SEC bylaws related to ethical conduct for derogatory comments and public criticism of another institution's athletic programs and staff. And so,
Steven,
what?
That is Julia and Selena got in a fight and you reprimanded them and told them not to do it again. That'll right. fix it.
Well, it might fix it with them because I would take electronics away, but this is not going
hey,
to fix it.
That's more than a reprimand.
Right, with two, you know, multi-million-dollar coaches. Like, what do they care if they've been publicly reprimanded? But it is hilarious. Now, this is so former Commissioner Mike Slive used this reprimand years ago, more than a decade ago, when he sat down all 12 coaches in the conference for a stern lecture after Lane Kiffin and Urban Meyer got into a war of words about recruiting practices. And so also that came less than a year after former Tennessee coach Philip Fulmer was issued a subpoena at SEC Media Days to be questioned for his role in the NCAA's investigation into Alabama. So there's been some, that's funny, it stands over here laughing. But here, first of all, this is highly entertaining. I love hearing this. This is
off-season stuff. It's
right.
bonus coverage for
right.
us.
Right. And so you want to play a couple of the clips?
First of all, I want to say, how about Lane Kiffin was an SEC coach?
Right.
At Tennessee.
Right.
And
oh,
now
yeah.
he's cycled out of there. And he's back.
It's like he's had several
careers. It's hard
to
believe he's back at Mississippi. Yeah.
He's had several careers since then. It's hard to believe that something is going on and he's not a part of it.
He's laughing. You know he's laughing over there.
Oh, he loves it.
Because he's been baiting A&M quietly, but Saban's the one who takes the heat.
Okay, let's start off and go back to Nick Saban. We have a few comments there to catch people up that haven't heard this, but I know a lot of people have. Let's just play comment number one from Nick Saban about NIL.
Name, image, and likeness to me is a great concept for players. Players have always been allowed to work. This is just a different opportunity for them to make money by working and using their own name, image, and likeness, whether it's signing autographs, whether it's doing commercials or ads for some company or whatever. So there's nothing wrong with that. And I told our players when this whole thing started to get agents, get representation, and so you create opportunities for yourself. And our players last year created $3 million worth of opportunity for themselves by doing it the right way. And I have no problem with that. And nobody had a problem on our team with that because the guys that got the money earned it. Now, there were only 25 guys on our team that had the opportunity to earn money. The issue and the problem with name, image, and likeness is coaches trying to create an advantage for themselves. I went out and said, okay, how could we use this to our advantage? They created what's called a collective. All right, a collective is an outside marketing agency that's not tied to the university, that's funded by alumni from the university. And they give this collective millions of dollars. And that marketing agency then funnels it to the players. All right, and the coach actually knows how much money's in the collective, so he knows how much he can promise every player. That's not what name, image, and likeness was supposed to be. That's what it's become, and that's the problem in college athletics right now. And now every player is saying, well, what am I going to get?
So what do you think of those comments?
The best explanation of what's going on that I've heard anyplace else. That's just like a factual statement with no heat, nothing that could get people excited. He didn't even criticize it. He just said that is what is going on. That is what's legal. If you're a coach at Alabama, you cannot tell a recruit coming in, I got $100,000 for you this next year. You can't say that. But this collective, which is not a part of the athletic department or the university, he can say, I know this group over here wants to talk to you, and they'll allocate $100,000 to you. The thing that he said at the first steps, the words that he used that were very good, is he said they worked for it and they earned it. They could work. You could work before when you're on scholarship. You could work at the 7-Eleven and make money. He's saying when you work and get paid, now you can use your name, image, and likeness, and work can be defined as signing autographs. You know, Nate Buchetti is not in studio.
Right.
Nate, you're using the 810 power, the power of Nate Buchetti's name, and that type of thing to go out and do some work, promote activities. And that's what he's saying. If you were a college athlete and had the capability of saying, let's pay Nate $10,000 to come out to our event today, you have worked. You've earned money using your name, image, and likeness. It's a different style of work, but it has value, and it's only valuable if the event that Nate's at feels like it's worth paying. You know, it's not like Nate just goes around and hangs out wherever he wants, you know, spins a wheel and shows up someplace with remote equipment. There is business behind this. There are people who say to 810's business people, we would like to have Nate out here, and we'll pay this amount to get this advertising, this kind of publicity.
Way more than 10,000.
Right.
More.
I'm just using a small example. You know, it could be a million.
But yeah, right.
You see what I'm saying? It was yep. Work, and that's the word he used, work, and later he used the word earn. He doesn't think that that's happening when the collective gets the money, because what it was supposed to be is if a person who loves a university, like let's say University of Maine, they love Maine and they want to get a good football player there, and they have a big business, a car business, and they go, hey, I want so-and-so to come over here and talk about my car business. I'll sell more cars, and I'll give him a car, pay him $1 million, whatever. That was his business, and it's advertising money he would have spent someplace else. It just happened to go to the player. In other words, these college athletes should be in competition with the Chiefs players. That's the way to think about it. Here's an example I think I'd give you guys. Do you know that the Kansas City Chiefs football team has 53 to 90 players, depending on the time of year, right? Do you see those guys advertising much? Is their name, image, and likeness worth very much? Travis Kelce, Patrick Mahomes, a few players make tons of money. But why? The Chiefs are the biggest thing in this region. The NFL is the biggest thing. If there truly was name, image, and likeness value, these guys would be doing commercials all day, every day. Every one of those players would be making $20,000, $50,000, $200,000 for advertising. It doesn't happen. Hardly any of the Chiefs players are using their name, image, and likeness as Kansas City Chiefs to make money. Therefore, the college athletes around here should be competing for the same dollars, and what's happened is they're not. Why? Because they're not really going out there and selling their services to businesses. They're just trying to get money from the alumni, and these collectives have been an accumulation point. So, hey, if you only want to give $2,000, Stephen, and you're a big alum of Mizzou, I know you'd give more, $200,000 for you, but $2,000, you would say, well, I don't have a business to help this quarterback I hope come. I hope he comes to Mizzou. I'm willing to pay him money, but I don't have a business for him to advertise for. These collectives take care of that. Just funnel your money together. It's really, let's just all Mizzou fans put your money in this spot, and that money will get put over to the players. And the question is, how do they earn it? How do they work for it? And that's where it gets messy here, because no one will be able to define that. And that's where it's driving people like Nick Saban crazy. He explained it very, very well. Hopefully what I said added on to a little bit of what is being done out there and what the facts are to start with.
We have Stan Weber in studio back after this on WHB. All right, let's play. So I want to go through all these because Stan's the perfect person to get a reaction to all these clips before we get into the fire thrown back by Jimbo Fisher. Then the fun will begin. Okay, let's play the second clip from Nick Saban. Here he's talking about Alabama and how they do it right.
My job is to create a platform for our players to create value for themselves and their future by becoming better people, by graduating from school and developing a career off the field, and by seeing if they can develop a career on the field and play at the next level in the NFL. Our players have made $1.7 billion in the NFL since 2010. All right, so we've created a lot of opportunity. We also have one of the highest graduation rates, you know, in college athletics. We have the most guys that graduate inside of 4 years. So we've done a good job of that. But now in recruiting, we have players in our state that grew up wanting to come to Alabama that they won't commit to us unless we say we're going to give them what somebody else is going to give them. And my theory on that is everything that we've done in college athletics has always been equal. Your scholarship is equal. They get equal Alston money. They get equal cost of attendance. They get equal academic support. They get equal medical attention. Everything has always been equal. So I told our players, I said, we're going to have a collective, but everybody's going to get the same amount of opportunity from that collective. Now, you can go earn however much you want. And I tell the recruits the same thing, because our job is not to buy you to come to school here. And I don't know how you manage your locker room, and I don't know if this is a sustainable model, because one of you folks are going to give some player that comes to our school a bunch of money to come to our school. And then you're going to come to the game in full strut, thinking I'm going to tell everybody I got that guy to come to Alabama. And then he's not going to play, and he's going to transfer, and you're going to say, I'm never going to do this again. All right, so I don't know how it works. I don't know how you sustain a model like that. Now, I know that we're going to lose recruits because somebody else is going to be willing to pay them more.
I like how he describes this guy and coming to the game in full strut. Hey, I got that guy to come to Alabama, and then he doesn't play. I mean, you could see that scenario playing out, where someone, you know, is investing some money or thinking that, you know, and they're attracting a player and he doesn't play, or he thinks he has more pull with the program than he does. You know, that's, again, I think up to that point, he's explaining things very well in a way that maybe some of the coaches had not done yet, right?
Yeah, this is an infomercial and a get up to speed with what's going on in college athletics. So far, we haven't got to the meaty stuff.
Right.
He's done a nice job of explaining how things go. One thing that we should say, though, he makes a great point that the NCAA tries to keep things equal, but every coach has always tried to find something to not make it equal, and I'll give you the simplest example. Back when Bear Bryant was at Alabama recruiting these kids, I'm not talking about illegal recruiting, but you know what he said at Alabama that wasn't true at Vanderbilt or many of the other schools in the SEC? We're going to have three national games on TV, and others don't. And they said, it's not equal.
Right,
they'd be the first to say you can go to college and play football and get all these equal things academically, medically, and food wise, everything else, but you're only going to get on TV if you come to Alabama. So there's always been advantages that have been played on, and really a lot of people would just say, hey, we just got a different set of advantages and everyone knows the rules, so let's see it play out. But these guys, they don't stay. He is like a computer program right now. What we've played so far, Marco, is like a tutorial. You know, like, here is a recording from a computer about what some modern things are happening in college athletics. But he hasn't slipped up yet and started firing away at other coaches around to get his reprimand. After the break, I bet we'll hear a little bit more. It's building up, Stephen.
Oh, we build up, and then it climaxes with the Jimbo Fisher firing back. We will take a break back after this on WHB.